Erev Shabbos, it's so good to see you all. It's so good to be able to learn together again and to share some Divrei Torah, as has become our custom here on Friday mornings. We do 3 and 30, 3 ideas, 30 minutes to charge us up and to energize us for what is my favorite day of the week, none other than Shabbos Kodesh. So here we go. We have a double parsha this week, Bahar and Bechukosai. For those counting at home, that's going to mean that we have a lot of Torah readings to talk about. But here we go. First of all, I want to share with you a Gemara in Kiddushin. The Gemara in Kiddushin tells us a whole laundry list of things of how Hashem divides things in the world. And so the Gemara tells us, Asara Kabim Kshafim Yardu La'olam, that there were 10 amounts of witchcraft that were given over to the world. 9 of them were taken by the Egyptians, right? Tisha Natla Mitzrayim. And then the Gemara goes on and says, Asara Kabim Sicha Yardu La'olam, that there were 10 measurements of gossip taken in the world. Anyone want to guess who took 9 of them? It wasn't the men. It was the woman, says the Gemara. Tisha Natlu Nashim. Again, this is not a statement. I'm just sharing a Gemara, right? That's what the Gemara says. And then the Gemara says, Asara Kavim Shichrus Yardu L'Olam, that there were 10 measurements of drunkenness that were distributed to the world. Tisha Natlu Kushim. The Kushim took 9 of them. And here's the one I want to get to this morning. The Gemara then tells us, Asara Kavim Shena Yardu L'Olam, that there were 10 measurements of sleep that came into the world. Tisha Natlu Avadim. 9 of them were taken by slaves. Viecha Natlu Kol HaOlam Kulo. And the other one was distributed amongst the rest of the world. And the question is, number one, that we're going to deal with today, is what does that mean? What in the world is the connection between sleep and slavery? Now, as I've spoken about in the past, I believe that there are two types of people in the world. There are those types of people that I hate, and then there are those types of people that are like me. Let me tell you the types of people that I hate. Types of people that I hate are the types of people that are sitting at the dining room table, they're having a conversation, they're reading a book, they're watching something, whatever, and then they say, I'm going to sleep. They put their head down on the pillow, and they fall asleep immediately. I hate those people. I know a lot of them. I may actually live with one of them. I love her, though. But in general, I don't like people that are able to do that. Because then there's a second category of people in the world, and they're like me. And that is that no matter how hard they try, they are simply incapable of falling asleep. We toss, we turn, we read, we get up, we read more, we toss, we turn. Doesn't help. Right? So there are two types of people. Now, what differentiates between those two types of people? Why the discrepancy between the people that I hate and the people that are like me? The answer is very simple. Is because sleep is something that is completely outside our control. Think about the terminology that we use when we talk about sleep. We talked about, I drift off to sleeping, right? Sleep is one of the few things that no matter how powerful you are, no matter how important you are, falling asleep naturally is something that is completely out of your control. I simply cannot snap my fingers and say, I want to go to sleep. And instead, I lie awake hours and hours a night, frustrated that no matter how hard I try, I cannot force myself to go to sleep. Again, think of the terminology. Sleep overtakes us. We do not overtake sleep. And so it's something that's completely out of control. And so says the Gemara, something astounding, that what's true of sleep is true of slavery as well. In the same way I'm not in control of my sleep, so too, a slave is not in control of his or her own life. He cannot make his own choices. He can't determine his future. And so if to be a slave means to be sleepwalking through life, as the Gemara tells us, then to be free means the exact opposite. To be free means that you and I are in control. It means that you and I are capable of determining our future. I can choose to overcome my obstacles. I can choose what's holding me back from achieving a life of holiness. I can achieve from I can aspire to strive for just a little bit more. And so, whereas a slave is incapable, or as a slave is not in control of his ability to sleep, so too a slave is not in control of their ability to control their own life. And so that's why the Gemara says there's a correlation, there's a connection between slaves and sleep, because both categories are not in control. You and I are not in control when we fall asleep. I could try as much as I want. It's not going to work, no matter how important I am, no matter how powerful you are. It ain't going to matter. Slave is the exact same way. A slave is not in control of their own destiny. To be free. When we talk about our freedom, we talk about it in the context of freedom to make our own choices. Freedom to determine our destiny. Listen to this quote from Lord Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who says that the goal of the Torah is, quote, that no Jew was allowed to be or see himself as a slave. He might be reduced to slavery for a period of time, but this was a passing plight, not his identity. In other words, even if we find ourselves momentarily in situations of slavery or in situations where you and I are not in control, we should never view that as the definitive force of our identity. That to be free means that we are in control to shape and to determine our future, to make the decisions that will chart the course of our life. And so unlike a slave who sleepwalks through life, because you and I are free, we have the power to choose who we are and to choose who we want to become. We say that bracha every morning. Shelo asani aved. We thank Hashem that you didn't make me a slave. My friends, we are not just physically describing our life circumstances. Yes, I wasn't born into Egypt in the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. I was born into Boca Raton or Boston in the end of the 20th century. That's not just what I'm thanking Hashem for. Every single morning when I say to Hashem, Shelo asani aved, I'm saying, Hashem, thank you for not making me a slave. Thank you for creating me with free will. Thank you for creating me with the opportunity to chart my own destiny and to make the decisions that I want. Thank you for allowing me to shape my future. And so lesson number one of this coming week's Parsha is that you and I, because we are free, we all have choices to make. We can choose to sleepwalk through life. We can choose to throw our hands up in the air and say life is out of our control. We can choose to a life where other people, whether it's pop culture, whether it's the media, whether it's marketers, whether they make choices for us, or we can choose to be free. We can reject the, oh, because it was always me, it always will be me attitude. Instead, recognize that we are in control of our destiny, to make time for our priorities, and to finally become the real person we want to be, and the person that we aspire for. That, my friends, is what it means to be free and not to be a slave. So that's beautiful lesson number one, the Gemara in Kedushin, which connects the notion of slavery to sleep, because the same way that sleep is out of our control, a slave is not in control. But every single morning when you and I wake up and we say Shelo asani aved, we're thanking Hashem for the ability to make decisions on our own. That's lesson number one. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful message. Dayenu, if just for that. Lesson number two comes from the Sfas Emes. We go a little bit more Hasidic this morning. We went from a Gemara in Kedushin to a beautiful Sfas Emes. And the Sfas Emes, as he so oftentimes does, starts off with a Medrash. The Medrash wonders, uv'chukosai teilechu, that we are supposed to walk im b'chukosai, with your ordinances, with your laws. And the Sfas Emes is not the first person to notice this. The Midrash is not the first, right? It's an obvious question. It's a rare phraseology to say teilechu, that we should walk in the way of Hashem, right? Much more reasonable would have said tishmoru, right? If you keep my laws, tilmodu, if you learn my laws. What does it mean teilechu, if you walk in the ways of my laws? And so this, the Sfas Emes, the Medrash already picks up upon. And the Medrash, like it so oftentimes does, starts with a pasuk in Tehillim, kuf yed tes. And the pasuk in Tehillim says, chashafti drachai, Va'ashiva raglai ele dosecha. David HaMelech says, Chashavti drachai, I looked at all of the paths in front of me. Va'ashiva raglai ele dosecha. And I returned my legs to your edosecha, to your ways. Says the Medrash Amar David lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. David HaMelech says before Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Bechol yom vayom hayisi mechashe va'omer lamakom ploni ani holech. Every single day, David HaMelech, who was an enormously important person, he was a king and a general and a judge. He had enormous responsibilities. Every single day, David HaMelech woke up and said, I have so many responsibilities and so many obligations. Leves dira plonis ani maholech. I'm going to go visit this person and I'm going to go to that business meeting. And what would happen inevitably every single day? V'hayu raglai mevios osi lebate knesios ulebate midrashos. And instead of getting in my car and driving to my work or to driving to any of my obligations, where did my legs carry me? They carried me back to the Beis Medrash. That says the Medrash is Chashavti Derachai. I thought about all of the paths in front of me. Vashiva Raglai Elei Dosechen. My legs always drew me back to your Beis Medrash, back to your Beis Knesset. Well, I have a question on this Medrash. It's very nice. David HaMelech, he'd get in his car in the morning. He obviously had a Tesla, self-driving. He was trying to go to work, and the Tesla kept taking him to the Beis Medrash, right? I'm sure some jewel will work with Elon Musk to figure that out. How you can make a car that doesn't drive you to a bad place, but instead automatically drives you back to Shul, right? Okay, in the future. But that's not what the Medrash is talking about. Because I have a problem. You and I, we can't go to the Beis Knesset. We can't go to Shul, even though I'm in Shul right now. You and I can't gather together in Shul. And we can't gather together in a Beis Medrash. So what do you do with this Medrash? David HaMelech, so he had more opportunities than we did. He didn't learn it, live in a time of coronavirus. He's able to go to Shul. He's able to go to the Beis Medrash. That's what he aspires for. But me and you, well, we can't go to Shul. And we can't go to the Beis Medrash. So what options are there available for us? And here's the beauty of this Sfas Emes. Sfas Emes comes along and says, no, Rabbi Moskowitz, you are missing the point of the Medrash. The point of the Medrash isn't that David HaMelech got in his Tesla and that it automatically took him to the Shul. The Medrash is talking about something attitudinal. It was David HaMelech's attitude. David HaMelech was essentially saying that everywhere I went, I took Hashem and his Beis Medrash and his Shul with me. Everywhere I went, whether it was at home, whether it was in the supermarket, whether it was on a run, whether it was in the gym, wherever I went, David HaMelech says, Hashem came along with me. There was no two David HaMelechs. The David HaMelech that you saw in Shul and the David HaMelech that you saw at home. The David HaMelech you saw in a Beit Medrash and the David HaMelech that you saw in the supermarket. No, David HaMelech says it was all one and the same. Because I took Hashem along with me. Everywhere I went, it's as if I took the Beis Medrash with me. It's as if I took Shul with me. And so when I went to the supermarket, I carried the lessons and the morals and the values of everything I learned together with me. And so therefore, says the Sfas Emes, what David HaMelech is talking about here is a mentality. It's a mindset. It's an attitude that every single one of us must have. Says the Sfas Emes, Umasha Adam Nikra Mahalich. What does it mean that you are called Mahalchim? That we walk? What does that mean? Says the Sfas Emes, Lios Mosheich Chiyuso Yisbarach B'chol Davar V'chol Makom. It means that we bring Hashem alongside with us everywhere, at every moment, and every time. There is simply no circumstance in our lives where you and I don't have the capacity to connect to Hashem, to bring Hashem alongside with us, and to be messengers of Hashem and Kedusha and godliness into the world around us. And so says the Sfas Emes, this message is not contradictory to the times that you and I are living in, but it's all the more powerful for the times that you and I are living in. Because you're right, we can't go to Shul, and we can't go to the Beis Medrash. But you know what we can do? We can find opportunities for holiness and godliness and kedusha in every single aspect of our lives. Whether we're davening in our living room or in our back patio. Whether we're not going to the supermarket or whether we are going to the supermarket. Every single place that you and I walk, every step we take, every move we make, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes alongside with us. That says the Sfas Emes. Is the understanding of the first three words in the second parsha that we're going to read tomorrow morning? Im bechukosai telechu. Why does it use the word telechu, that it walks with you? Because says the Sfas Emes, that's exactly what Judaism needs to be. It needs to come along with you. It's not that it stays in one place and then when I go to another place, I check my Judaism at the door. No, says the Sfas Emes. The message of the parsha, im bechukosai telechu, that if you're willing to carry Judaism with you, then you will experience enormous brachos. But if not, if we bifurcate our lives, if we fail to carry our Judaism with us, and we check it at the door of our shuls or our Beis Medrash or even our homes, and there's a different Philip Moskowitz outside of the home than there is inside of the home, then we miss the boat. And so says the Sfas Emes, that's lesson number two, Im bechukosai teilechu, is that anywhere you and I go, we take Hashem with us. We take opportunities to connect to Hashem and to bring Hashem into this world together alongside with us. That is our mission. That is our mandate of what it means to be a Jew. When we talk about ourselves as being shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being messengers of Hashem, what are we messengers of? That's the answer. A messenger carries it with him everywhere he goes. We are supposed to carry the message of Hashem every single place we go. I've shared in the past a beautiful insight from Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner says that many people, it's a halachic idea, but the notion of that at the end of Kriya Shema, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, many people elongate the Dalid of Echad. Why? So there's a halachic reason we don't want to misunderstand the letter at the end of the word Echad. But says that Rav Huttner, a beautiful philosophic, hashkafic idea, that the reason why we elongate the word Echad is because we want to include as much as possible under that word Echad, to recognize to Hashem that even though there might be various aspects of my life, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a son, I might be a grandson, I might, right? I work, I have different personas in my life, but it's all under Echad. It's all for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to serve the boss. That is to be that messenger of Hashem. That is to serve Hashem in this world. And so no matter where I go, whether I'm at the gym, whether I'm at the supermarket, whether I'm home, whether I'm in, it doesn't matter. It's all Echad. It's all for one purpose. And it's all for one goal. It's all for one mission. And it's all for one mandate. And what is that? That is to serve Hashem. That is to be a messenger of Hashem in this world. So idea number one was don't sleepwalk through life. Slaves are asleep at the wheel. You and I are alive. We're free. And that means we can make our own choices. Message number two is from the Sfas Emes, a beautiful idea in Bichukosai Telechu. Why the word Telechu? Because we bring Hashem with us everywhere. And at every moment of our lives, there's no bifurcation, there's no hypocrisy. The same Philip Moskowitz you see here is the one that I strive for to be at home, and it's the same one I strive to be for if I'm playing tennis against Rabbi Goldberg. Maybe not. Maybe that's a little bit of a different Philip Moskowitz. But I strive. It's all under Echad. It's all the same person. Obviously, after quarantine, we play tennis, not during. Okay, idea number three. Here we go. This is arguably my favorite idea that I'm going to share with you this morning. I'm so excited about it. And I want to introduce it with a pasuk from the Parsha. The pasuk says, V'chi somru ma nochal b'shana shviz. A whole time of the Shemitah year, the Torah describes what it's going to be like. And then in the midst of the conversation, the Torah takes a pause and it says, let's view Shemitah through the eyes of the farmer's experience. And the farmer is going to question to himself, V'chi somru manocha b'shana shviz. What am I going to eat during the Shemitah year? My ground lays fallow. I'm not working it. It's not producing fruit. And even if it does, I can't benefit and enjoy from it. So what in the world am I supposed to eat for a year? Says the pasuk, it's very simple. Hashem says it's very simple. I'm going to give you such an overabundance of produce during the sixth year that it will count for the sixth, seventh, and eighth year. You have nothing to worry about whatsoever. And so here you have a farmer that's filled with inner doubts. He's worried about what he's going to eat during the Shemitah year. Hashem says, I got you covered. I gave you a lot more during the sixth year. Isn't that such a strange response? I'm sure it's a pasuk that many of you have read countless times in your life, and yet I'm going to ask you a question now, and you're going to say, Rabbi Moskowitz, that's a good question. I never thought about that. The farmer's talking in what time period? He's talking about the seventh year, right? He already knew that he killed it financially in the sixth year. Right? The promise that Hashem gives to him already happened. Right? And again, the farmer's nervous. He says, what am I going to eat in the seventh year? Hashem says, I'll give you a lot during the sixth year. Shkayach. Didn't the farmer already know about that? Didn't he already know that Hashem had already given him an excess of the previous year, that he killed it financially, that his quarterly earnings were off the charts, that the stock is going through the roof? The farmer knew all that. And yet, how then is he still worried during the seventh year? He already knows he has enough produce. So Hashem gives him an answer that already happened. Hashem says, because I'm going to give you more in the sixth year. If he already knew he got more in the sixth year, so why is he worried in the first place? What's he so nervous about? It's an amazing question. I never thought about it. Let me share with you an answer from the Shemina Tova Bernard Weinberger. This will blow your mind away. Money back guaranteed. Worth the price of admission. Here we go. Says the Shemina Tova the following. Dehin bar de b'shana hashishis kisheba alav habracha v'hu makir ba hu nosein shevach v'hodai le'ash kadosh baruch hu. During the sixth year, that's exactly what happened. The farmer crushed it financially. He normally makes $1 million. He made $15 million during the sixth year. And you know what happened during the sixth year when he made $15 million? Every morning he'd wake up and he'd sing halal and hodah to Hashem. He'd say, thank you, Hashem, for allowing me to crush this year. Thank you for making me so successful. He was overflowing with gratitude to Hashem. But says the Shemina Tov, Ava behigia shana hashvis, but when the seventh year comes, hu kvar shachach es birchaso, he already forgot all of the blessings that Hashem gave us. Bishana she'avra, v'roa sadehu, he sees his fields that are empty, v'hu omeid, and he's standing there, u'mislonein, and he starts lamenting, manochal bashana hashvis, what in the world am I going to eat this year? Says the Shemina Tov, something so amazingly insightful. During the sixth year, as the farmer is experiencing the miracles of Hashem, the overabundance, the shefa brachos of Hashem, he is singing songs of praise. Hashem, I love you. You're great to me. Thank you so much. Seventh year comes along, and all of a sudden, the land lies fallow. And he goes out into his field, and there's nothing happening. And so he forgets everything that happened the year before. And he looks to Hashem and he starts complaining and he says, God, how could you do this to me? How can you ask me to keep my land fallow? How can you ask me not to provide any produce? Says the Shemina Tov, something that's so insightful, that as the sixth year becomes the seventh year and becomes the eighth year, the farmer's recognition of the miracles begins to wane. The memories of that extraordinary year of production are suddenly reinvented or reoriented into his mind to the fact that it stops becoming about the brachas of Hashem. And he no longer recognizes the role that Hashem plays in his life. He just starts lamenting, what am I supposed to do? And so says the Shemina Tov, the real test of life is not just to appreciate Hashem's blessings, but to continue to appreciate Hashem's blessings long after they've been granted. Right? You and I know this to be true. That the moment we experience a miracle, it's very easy to sing praise to Hashem. But something that you experience every single day, that becomes much harder to feel Hashem's love and to feel his embrace. I learned that lesson last week on this very class when I have been sleeping on the couch since then because I had the audacity to complain about flowers. And one of the things I complained about flowers was that the second you cut them off from their source, they start to die. And so I thought flowers were ridiculous. Boy, did I get taught otherwise by the flurry of text messages and emails that I got after the class, 100% from women, who were very offended that I had the audacity to complain about flowers. And one of them made a very good point. She said, you want to know why flowers are so precious? Specifically because they don't last forever. It's specifically the fact that they don't last forever that makes you appreciate them all the more when you have them. And I said to her, I said, it's exactly like time. Right? The fact that time is finite should mean that you and I should appreciate it. What happens is that because time is ubiquitous for us, we don't appreciate it. We waste time. But if we really felt that time was finite, that time has an end to it, namely when you and I cease to exist in this world, so we would appreciate every moment that we have. Why do we not appreciate every minute we're alive? Right? Let's take a second and reflect upon the fact that if you're here on this Zoom, no matter what challenges exist in this world, your heart's beating, your lungs are working, right? You're alive. Now, why don't you and I stop to appreciate that? The answer is because it's always here. It's constant. And what happens when a baby's born is you sing praise to Hashem. Hashem, thank you so much for this beautiful baby. But by the time the baby's 2 or 7 or 10 or 12, random numbers, so you start to take it for granted. And you wake up in the morning and you forget what 10 years ago or 12 years ago was the biggest miracle of your life. Now it's just something regular. and you start complaining about the day-to-day mundane trivial aspects of life. Says Rabbi Bernhard Weinberger, no, the message of Shemitah is not simply to appreciate the gifts that Hashem gives us, but to constantly appreciate the gifts that Hashem gives us. In the sixth year, the farmer felt the miracle of Hashem, but as the sixth year became the seventh year and came the eighth year, and he started taking it for granted, stopped being miraculous for him anymore. Our challenge, my friends, every single day is to wake up and to realize that if there's air in our lungs and there's a beating heart in our body, we are given the greatest gift and miracle in the history of mankind. And it's something that even though we're so used to, we can never, ever take for granted. This has so many practical applications. Let me give you an application in Tanakh. Again, one that we've spoken about in the past, then I'll give you a contemporary application. The application in Tanakh, again, we've spoken about in the past. One of my favorite stories in all of Tanakh, it's a story of Chizkiyahu. The Jewish people are on the cusp of utter destruction. Sancheiriv, the king of Assyria, is making his way across the Middle East. And he's coming to Yerushalayim. He's about to capture all of Yerushalayim and destroy it. And in the 11th hour, the book of Malachim describes a stunning defeat. It was the night before Sancheiriv was going to destroy Yerushalayim. And an angel comes and kills 185,000 Assyrian soldiers. 185,000, a massive plague. Sancheiriv wakes up in the morning. He goes around the camp. He can't believe what happens. Everyone's dead. So what happens? Afterwards, the Gemara tells us that Hashem wanted to make King Chizkiyahu Mashiach. And then Hashem decides against it. Says the Gemara, why? Shelo Amar Shira. We've discussed this in the past because Sancheiriv didn't sing praise to Hashem. If you witnessed a miracle like that, would you have sung praise to Hashem? Of course you would have. 185,000 soldiers are encamped on your border. You wake up the next morning, they're all gone. You would sing praise to Hashem. So how could it be that Chizkiyahu didn't sing praise to Hashem? Says R' Moshe Feinstein. It's very obvious. Because for Chizkiyahu, everything was a miracle. And when everything becomes miraculous, you stop seeing it as a miracle. It just becomes the norm for you. Miracles become so natural that you stop being filled with wonderment and amazement when you see them. And so Chizkiyahu didn't not sing praise to Hashem because he didn't love Hashem and care about Hashem. It's just because everything in his life was so miraculous, he stopped seeing it as a miracle. It was natural. So our challenge, like Chizkiyahu, is to never take Hashem's miracles for granted. To always appreciate the myriad of brachos that you and I have in our lives, despite any challenges that coronavirus has presented. And I'm not minimizing them for a second. But if you and I have air in our lungs and a beating heart in our body and we're able to see and feel and experience the beauty of the world around us, if Hashem woke us up this morning for a reason and for a purpose, then that is just as miraculous as the day that you were born and your parents were overwhelmed with simcha. You and I should be dancing in our seats right now. And the reason why we're not is because this beautiful idea of the Shemana Tov is because when miracles become so constant, we stop feeling them as so miraculous. I am reflecting upon this week, not just because of the Parshios of Bahar and B'chukosai, but because this coming Thursday night into Friday is a very special day on the modern Israeli Jewish calendar, and that is none other than Yom Yerushalayim. Yom Yerushalayim, again, I was not alive in 1967. Many of you were. But from reading books and speaking to people who were alive in 1967, one thing I do know, and that is that when the Jewish people regained control over the old city of Yerushalayim, access to places and historical sites that we hadn't had access to in 2,000 years, right? The Jewish people were overwhelmed with this euphoria and with this excitement. If I had a dollar for every article I read of someone who became religious after the 1967 war because they saw the miracles of Hashem and they were definitive in their minds. They simply couldn't understand how the Jewish people prevailed over and over and over again, despite even the harshest of odds. And yet, if you look now at the last 53 years of Jewish history, what 53 years ago was the greatest miracle, the most defining moment in modern Jewish history, now many of us, so we take Israel a little bit for granted, right? It becomes about politics and who's creating a government and who's out of the government. And, well, Israel did this and the buses are running then and the markets are open here and there's a mall outside here, right? Let's not get caught up in those conversations. Because the message of Shemitah is that even when something becomes a constant in our lives, we can never lose sight of just how miraculous it is. And so this coming week, as we celebrate Yom Yerushalayim, as we mark the date on the calendar when Hashem restored sovereignty for the Jewish people to all parts of a united Yerushalayim, let's dance and sing and realize it's just as miraculous as it was 53 years ago. And that even though it's 53 years later and I was born into a world that never knew of a non-united Yerushalayim, right? When I was born, I've only known of a united Yerushalayim, right? But I should never take it for granted. I should never realize and appreciate just how miraculous it is and it will forever be. And so we shared three ideas, 30 minutes. That's my promise to you. Idea number one was the very beautiful idea from the Gemara in Kedushin that connects slavery to sleep. And we described that just as someone cannot control falling asleep, so too a slave is not in control. But for me and you to be free means that we are in control to make our own choices, to chart our own future, and to decide our own destiny. Idea number two was that beautiful idea from the Sfas Emes. Sfas Emes, who tells us, Im b'chukosai teilechu. What does it mean, teilechu? That we have to carry Hashem with us everywhere we go. And at any time and at every moment, we don't have two different Philip Moskowitz. It's the same person. I carry it with me. I carry Hashem with me every single place I go. And the last is this magnificent, gorgeous idea of Rabbi Bernhard Weinberger, the Shevin Atov. This idea that we shouldn't just appreciate miracles, but we should appreciate miracles even when they stop being so miraculous. Even when we start taking them a little bit for granted, we should never lose sight of just how miraculous our lives are, the historic time period that you and I are living in, to appreciate the coming holiday of Yom Yerushalayim, and to appreciate that notion that if there's air in our lungs, if there's a heart beating in our body, then you and I should be forever appreciative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so I want to wish you all a beautiful Shabbos, an inspirational Shabbos, a meaningful Shabbos. Anyone who needs a Refuah Shleima, we daven from the depths of our heart for a continued, speedy, and painless Refuah Shleima. And most importantly, that everyone should stay safe, stay strong, and always remain besimcha. Everyone have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos.